The serve, sliced, backhand return. Rafa with a backhand volley, and it's over. Game, set, and match. His third U.S. Open Men's Singles Championship.
Sloan from deep beyond the baseline plays a backhand. Keys a forehand. Sloan just hammering away. Now steps into a forehand. It hangs over. Forehand netted by Keys, and Sloan Stephens is the 2017 U.S. Open champion. A warm hug at the net between the two friends.
Here comes a big smile with Sloan. She can't believe it.
Welcome to episode 16 of Courtside, the official podcast of the U.S. Open. I'm Nick McCarville, and we are officially into U.S. Open series season. You guys, the U.S. Open's just a few weeks away, and this episode, we're wrapping up the first event of the series, the BB&T Atlanta Open, while previewing the next stop on the series tour, the Mubadala Silicon Valley Classic in San Jose. And we're also giving a nod this week to the City Open in D.C., which features a slew of top players from both the ATP and the WTA. Later in the episode, I'm joined by two-time U.S. Open runner-up and the reigning Australian Open champion, Caroline Wozniacki, in an exclusive interview to talk about how she keeps her fire burning to work so hard on tour, what works well for her and her game on the hard courts this part of the season, and much, much more. Now, you might hear some background noise. That's because it's a rainy day in Washington, D.C., where I've been doing some reporting here for the podcast. But first, I want to check in on the action here in D.C., as well as across the nation in San Jose, as the tennis makes its way to the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center and the U.S. Open. It's set to start August 27th. I just mentioned August 27th, but this year the U.S. Open will be open to the public during Fan Week, August 21 to 26. Come out and watch the qualifying tournament, see the top pros practice up close and personal. You guys, this is your chance to see the stars like never before. This is the week when things are not necessarily quiet, but everything feels so accessible. You can also check out the brand new Louis Armstrong Stadium. That's Fan Week, August 21 to 26. In the lead-up to the U.S. Open on August 27. Okay, before we dive fully into episode 16, I also want to remind you that we're getting a double dose of Courtside every week this season in the lead-up to the U.S. Open. So this summer season, you get twice your money. My weekly wraps and player interviews run on Tuesday, while you can hear our very own Hall of Famer Steve Flink talk to the legends of the game every Thursday. Did you miss last week's chat with Andy Roddick, the former world number one and 2003 U.S. Open champion? Check out that and more from Courtside on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your favorite shows. Okay, so today we're talking all things U.S. Open series. We're here in D.C. at the City Open, which is not officially part of the series, but we'll include them in this episode. And also I'm including in this episode Ava Wallace. She's a sports reporter for the Washington Post, and you are covering the City Open for how many years has it been now?
This is the third year in a row that I've been covering it, but it's like year number 10 for me that I've been attending because I grew up here, so this is my hometown tournament.
And this is your third year covering it for the Post, is that right?
I covered, the first year was with USA Today, and then the second year for the Post,
Awesome. Yep. And this is your first U.S. Open podcast. Welcome
to
Courtside.
Thank you. More importantly, yes, my first U.S. Open podcast.
Okay, so we're talking D.C. and San Jose, but Ava, let's actually start with Atlanta. Last week at the BB&T Atlanta Open, it was victory number 5 for John Isner, 2013, 14, 15, 17, and 18. He beat Ryan Harrison in an All-American men's final. He joins Jimmy Connors, John McEnroe, Pete Sampras, and Andre Agassi as the only American man to win the same tournament 5 times. That's kind of crazy. It's his 14th career title, second of the season behind Miami. He also made the semifinals at Wimbledon, and that leads me, my first question really to you is, do we feel like John Isner could make a dent at the U.S. Open this year?
I think the most important thing is John Isner probably feels like he could make a dent at the U.S. Open this year. He's been having an amazing year. I actually talked to him after he won Miami. He said the most important thing for him was that he could go back to that memory now, being on court, not just lifting the trophy, of actually sticking with points and figuring them out. And he kind of has a blueprint in his mind now. And he said the confidence that he got from working through those points and actually crafting a win at that tournament has helped him immensely. And he feels like he has more confidence than ever. He had a great showing at Wimbledon. And you know that Atlanta tournament is so important to him. He's a Southern guy. He went to Georgia. He loves playing stateside. And I'm sure that honor that he got being included in that great great group of American tennis players meant so much to him. So I think, more than me, I think he could make a dent in the U.S. Open for sure, but I think he's probably more confident in himself than ever.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And before he made that run at Wimbledon to the Final Four, the U.S. Open back in 2011 was the only time he had made the quarterfinals at a major. It just hasn't necessarily been his slam, Ava, and the slams really haven't been his place to play his best tennis. But I'm so intrigued that you say that he can envision himself now having been a Miami Open champion and been a Wimbledon semifinals. Now, you weren't at Wimbledon in London, your colleague Liz Clark was, but I'm guessing you observed some of it. I mean, I would imagine that John's confidence only grows from that showing at SW19.
Yeah, I talked to John on the phone after Miami, and then I did watch him at Wimbledon, and just seeing how he was kind of able to work through that field, because he had a tough draw, and of course, that meeting with Kevin Anderson. What's unfortunate about that super, super long match is there's so much we talk about it in the fifth set tiebreaker, and we don't talk about, you know, there was a lot of valor in that match. There was a lot of grit. There was a lot of perseverance. Mm-hmm. And of course, John Isner's shown that before, but I just think it feels like he's got a little something extra. And I think you could see that not just with the way he handled the loss also, but just with how he acted on court and how he was still fighting to get to balls in that, like, gosh, 2.5 hour, whatever, 2 hour, 55 minute fifth set. Yeah, he looked good even when it looked bad.
I love that he just keeps coming, and we'll see how he shows up for the U.S. Open. Also an upswing for Ryan Harrison. He's now the world number 57. He had reached the top 40 last year. He's 26. He's a kid who's worked really hard, Ryan Harrison, a runner-up for a second year in a row in Atlanta. And it's good to see Young Chung, the South Korean player, semifinalist in Australia. He's back on court. He defeated Taylor Fritz before losing to Harrison in a third set tiebreak. But it's nice to see good success for Ryan Harrison making the final. And then also Young Chung, semifinalist at the Australian Open. He's had some injuries this year, but he's back on tour as well.
Yes, I love seeing these young guys. We've got a lot of them at City Out this week, but he's absolutely one who, the second we saw him in Australia, was like, yes, I'm latching on to this guy. I'm excited to watch his career. That's why it's fun to follow the young guys, because you get to see them kind of grow up a little bit, like he certainly has over the year.
What about his game? I mean, I think a lot of people point to that win over Novak Djokovic at the Australian Open, but is there something about Hyun Chung that you're sort of drawn to?
There's something about, he's one of those young guys that actually the thing that I'm drawn to them most, and I include in that group people like Francis Tiafoe and Denis Shapovalov, it's that they're not so polished. They're not veterans yet. And I really like that they're a little bit raw on court. Their games are raw, certainly, but their personalities also shine through a lot more. On the women's side, we see that with someone like Naomi Osaka. I really love that these kids, and I'll call them kids even though, you know, they're adults, but they joke around. Chung has talked about his glasses and just what playing with those has been like for him on court, because it's not something you see often. It's just something new and different, and not just more of the same. So
right.
I think that's definitely what I latched on to him about. Yeah.
Well, you can see Hyun Chung and more stars at the U.S. Open this summer. Go to Ticketmaster.com to secure your U.S. Open tickets. Ticketmaster is the only official ticketing partner of the U.S. Open. Now, when you buy your Arthur Ashe Stadium tickets, which you guys just buy Arthur Ashe at least for one session, right?
Oh, my God. Oh,
and
magical.
It's amazing,
it's
right?
Magical. Truly magical.
With the roof now, too. You're going to be there,
mm-hmm.
right?
I'll be there.
When you do that, you also get access to general admission seating. So that includes all of our outside courts. It also includes the brand new Louis Armstrong Stadium, which, by the way, also has a roof.
I'm really excited to see that new stadium.
Yeah, it's gonna be
awesome. I'm pumped to see what that looks like, yeah.
It's making its U.S. Open debut, the new Louis, they're calling it.
And it has a roof. It has a roof. As we sit here in the rain, I'm like, it has a roof.
Yeah, totally. As we sit here listening to the court dryers
right.
try to dry the court. And new Louis is going to have an evening session as well. It is quadruple the pleasure. There's going to be an evening session inside Arthur Ashe and inside Louis. Okay, let's go ahead and get to this week U.S. Open series-wise. It's San Jose, the Mubadala Silicon Valley Classic. Garbiñe Muguruza is the top seed. It also features Madison Keys, a couple women named Williams, both Venus and Serena playing in San Jose, Victoria Azarenka, and more. Now, this is an event that has been around for a long time. Stanford, one of the longest-running WTA events. It moved from Stanford to San Jose State. I think a lot of people excited for it in San Jose. I think a lot of people excited for Serena taking on Johanna Konta in the first
round. Do you think people are excited for that? Yeah, I think people are excited for that.
Serena taking on Johanna Konta. Madison Keys is the defending champion. Konta is the 2016 champion. Serena's won there three times, including 2014 most recently. Venus has won there twice, not since 2002. Ava, I was actually at, that was my first pro event as a high schooler.
Goodness.
I went and watched.
As a high schooler?
Yes, in 2002.
I would love to see pictures from that.
Okay, so.
You and Venus, yeah.
Did I meet Venus? I watched Venus play, I think she played Anna Smashnova. I'd have to check.
Whoa, TBT. I bet, okay, you probably have like either old digital camera, like the clunky digital camera, or like disposable camera
Full
pictures.
Full on disposable,
Please
you're
find
right.
Them. Please find them, yes.
Okay, so I just listed that, and then also Azarenka, she could play Muguruza in the second round. Muguruza, the top seed, getting a bye. What storylines are jumping out to you from that San Jose draw?
That's a lot of storylines. I am so fascinated to see Victoria Azarenka kind of climb back to what she once was. Just imagining a meeting between her and Muguruza with the power that would be in that match. I just want them both back at full speed and full confidence. That would be great. Storylines there. Venus not winning since 2002. Venus is still so important in this sport, and you know, she's still around, even though, like you said, she's got these, you know, things that we dig out of her past in 2002. I would love to see her win again. Serena's comfortable there in her home. California is one of her many homes.
Yes.
Silicon Valley, close to home. There are probably billboards up there too. Gosh, that's a packed field. Everything seems like a storyline.
I think it'll be interesting to me. You mentioned Serena especially. I think it'll be interesting to see how Serena goes, especially having coming off Wimbledon, where she made the final. She looked so good in that tournament. And then by the time it got into week two, the women's draw was decimated from its top stars. None of the top 10 made the quarterfinals, which was the first time that happened in the Open era. But I always think Serena's vulnerable in her first few matches back, in any iteration. I think this is another new start for her in her comeback, and Johanna Konta is a really tough first test for her.
And that was a way better answer than mine. I'm so interested to see if I was like, I love all of the stories, but
no, of course.
I'm so interested to see if a lot of these top-seeded women who fell at Wimbledon have that a little bit fire back in them for the hardcourt season, either wanting to reset or wanting to kind of prove that they still got it or wanting to just have a good fight in them. So that'll be really interesting to see how people like, you know, Muguruza bounce back or at least try to.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, you know, I'm sort of entrenched in tennis, right? Week in
what?
And week out. Yeah. But you're a general sports reporter. You do everything for the Post. Someone like Muguruza, who's won the French Open, she's won Wimbledon, but then she also is such a roller coaster. I don't feel like maybe golf, you could compare it a little bit of someone who comes in, wins a major, and then doesn't make the cut in the next major. But she just hasn't been able to find that consistent form. And I don't know if it bothers her. It kind of bothers me. Obviously, that doesn't matter to her, but she's an anomaly, I think, in top sports.
Yeah, and it's also, you mentioned, like, you are entrenched in tennis. So with someone like that, for someone like me who watches sports year-round, but it's not always tennis, I kind of forget about her until she pops up again. And I'm like, yes, man, this would be great. So it's funny, especially in individual sports. It is like golf, where it's like, her career is riding on her consistency as well. So you know there's just so much pressure on her shoulders, especially because she must know that she can do it. She has a lot of great titles under her belt, obviously. But you have to think that's where tennis gets so hard, because sometimes it's just going to be mental. Sometimes, since you don't have a team to lean on, you wake up in the morning and your boyfriend broke up with you. You broke up with your boyfriend. You're not feeling well. It's all on you. So it's life, exactly. So I think that's what makes tennis so interesting, though, is that it's so weird as an outsider looking in. We could never understand. I've never been in her position.
And it's all on that one player's shoulders, right?
It's
all on her shoulders. So that's happening in San Jose. You can, of course, go to usopenseries.com to see TV schedules and much more from what's happening at the Mubadala Silicon Valley Classic. Say that three times fast.
I don't think I could say it once.
Okay, let's go to an easier pronounced tournament, the City Open in
nice.
D.C.
Short.
Top seed this week is Sasha Zverev. He's the defending champion, but we also have a whole slew of players you'll recognize, including the comeback of Andy Murray. He played just a couple tournaments before, withdrawing from Wimbledon in the U.K., but you also have names like Denis Shapovalov, Stan Wawrinka, Kei Nishikori, David Goffin, Francis Tiafoe, Stefano Tsitsipas, Nick Kyrgios, Steve Johnson, I mentioned Mr. Murray, Kyle Edmund, and John Isner all playing in D.C. this week. Really exciting draw. Again, this tournament isn't part of the U.S. Open Series, but we're giving it its due. 12 Americans also included.
That's kind of you.
In that field.
Yeah. That's kind of you.
What are you looking forward to this week?
Oh, my gosh. I am looking forward to... Oh, it's well, this draw is so interesting. I talked about the youth earlier. We've kind of got two opposite sides of the spectrum here. We've got all of the young players like Tiafo and Shapovalov and Chung, as we mentioned before. And then we've got these guys making comebacks. I'm so interested to see what Stan looks like, what Stan Wawrinka's doing. Andy Murray was just telling us on Saturday, he talked to the media, he hasn't played a hard court match in 18 months. I have no idea what he said. It's not just my hip I'm worried about, the hip injury that he's been recovering from, but he doesn't know how the rest of his body is going to respond. It's humid here. They're drying the courts right now. The courts are going to be playing fast. It's going to be a little crazy out there. So I am really interested to see what he does in two or three sets out here, for sure.
We're recording this late Monday evening, so you do hear those... You do hear the court dryers doing their work, trying to get the courts ready for Andy Murray and Stan Wawrinka tonight. So you'll know by the time you listen to this how Andy Murray did. But just in general, I mean, we look at the top guys. For so long, it felt like Roger, Rafa, Novak, Andy were untouchable. Stan joined the big four. They were the big five for a while. But you're right. These guys are having to fight back. And it's given guys like Sasha Zverev,
yes,
like John Isner, like Kevin Anderson, who had to pull out from this week due to a hand injury, I think. It has given them all opportunities to knock on the door and to also remind people that, hey, we can win these big titles too.
Oh, yeah, and especially guys like Zverev and someone who isn't here this week but played last year, Dominic Thiem, you can see how much they want it too. I mean, Zverev loves the crowd here. Obviously, he won last year, and he really won a lot of D.C. fans over, and he is, like, soaking up all of the attention. This is a really intimate tournament. You can watch the practice courts. It's a pretty small field, and you can get pretty up close and personal with the players, and he loves that. And it's so clear that he wants to not just be a top tennis player, but he wants to be a big tennis star. And that, I think, I love seeing that drive. It's really fun. You can see it on court every night.
Also, this tournament is a big part of the community. It's tied to the Washington Tennis and Education Foundation, which does great work here in D.C. And it also has one of the few female tournament directors on the ATP World Tour. Keely O'Brien does a fantastic job. I'm assuming that you know her pretty well, having worked this tournament now for several years. But just overall, I mean, what does the City Open mean to the greater Washington tennis community?
It means quite a lot, actually. It's so funny. Players, when they talk to the media about DC, they generally say they really like being in the city because it's so multicultural. It reminds them a little bit more of, or at least it reminds the Europeans a little bit more of home. We have lower buildings here, we got a lot of statues, a lot of monuments. But mainly it's really tied into the community, and you see tennis fans of all walks of life, all color, everything like that. And they're loud, they're into it, they're passionate, and they really, really latch on to their winners. And they're people who come back and kind of play year after year. I believe Sloane Stephens has played every single year that the women's event has existed, and people love her here for it. And they love seeing her, they love being able to cheer for a young black tennis player. Same with Frances Tiafoe, who's also a DC area native. And it's just really special. It seems fitting also that Keely O'Brien, this is her second year directing the tournament. It just seems fitting in just how progressive a city D.C. is that she should be the one in charge. And we were actually talking to Andrea Petkovic earlier, and she was saying you can kind of tell when there's a woman running the tournament. There's a little bit more, she called it a little bit more of a women's touch, and then went on to explain, you know, she got here really early, Andrea did, and Keely took all care of all of the hotel reservations herself, just a little bit something extra that she said she appreciates it. So I don't know if that's true across the board or if that's just Keely, but players certainly notice that this is a special tournament.
We mentioned Keely, we mentioned Sloane Stephens, who's the number two seed here this week. Also Caroline Wozniacki is in the draw. Naomi Osaka, Belinda Bencic, Petkovic had a win today. This is obviously a smaller women's event. It's just a WTA International, but they bring a pretty good field themselves, too.
They do, and it's getting better every year. Last year, we had Simona Halep, and she was the highest-ranked woman to ever play this event. And now we have the number two and the number three. I shouldn't say we. I should say they. ranked women in the field. I know. I just identify with it. So it's really cool to see how this tournament has grown. It's only been around since 2012, and they've done a really good job to attract more and more players. They also have the benefit of being on the East Coast, where players who don't want to go all the way out to California can make this a pit stop before Canada, which they appreciate having options.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's this week. It's the City Open in D.C., and then for the U.S. Open Series, it is the Mubadala Silicon Valley Classic. Ooh. I think I've said it maybe
all
five times now.
You're warmed up.
Brian, my editor, is helping me out each and every time. Next week, you guys, the U.S. Open Series continues. It's the Rogers Cup, the women at Coupe Rogers. That's going to be in Montreal, and then the men, the Rogers Cup, they go back to Toronto. They switch every other year, so it's a cool system that Tennis Canada runs there. That is going to be, of course, on ESPN. Check your local TV listings or go to usopenseries.com. Now, if you don't have it already, you need it. Put a calendar reminder, maybe like August 23rd, for the US Open app. It's coming. It's better than ever. It's essential for tennis fans. Download the app to follow matches live, read the latest news, and watch all the best highlights. Also, IBM is helping out, as they always do at the US Open, and they give us the best insights and stats. I feel like now, like every sport, every major sporting event, you have to get the app, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's like, I feel like every event, I'm like, okay, I need the app.
We still run maps of the tournament grounds in the newspaper. I'm always like, That's nice.
That's
quaint. Yeah, that's the app. Yeah.
Got to
get the app.
All right. Well, our featured player guest is Caroline Wozniacki. She first reached a Grand Slam final in 2009 at the U.S. Open as a teenager and then became world number one soon thereafter. Her success on tour, in a sense, became an Achilles heel. She would long be stamped as one of the few number ones not to win a Grand Slam, but broke that spell in a spellbinding Australian Open earlier this year, saving match points in the second round against little-known Jana Fek, being down 1-5 in the third set. She would win a thrilling, dramatic, draining final against Simona Halep, one of the best matches of the season still, to capture her first... I just got chills.
I wish I were still watching that match. That's one of those I was like, I would watch that right now.
I just got chills to capture her first major title. So before we get to Caroline, I mean, what's been your impression of her year? I mean, obviously she's been through so much. I spoke with her for the podcast. She is the Energizer Bunny that just doesn't stop, because she plays a very physical, draining game, and she's made it work now, and she has a Grand Slam title, and no one can ever take that away from her.
Yeah, she's so easy to root for because she's just a grinder, and you can see on that court, you're like, man, no wonder this girl runs marathons. Like, she's just chasing down every ball, so it's really fun to watch her play. It was really fun to watch her play against Simona Halep, another grinder. But you mentioned Muguruza earlier, and for me, they're almost kind of in the same pot in that it's such a roller coaster, and I am so invested in Caroline's game, especially because she does pull off such really great matches. But it's been, I feel like she's still trying to prove herself, even though she has that Grand Slam win. It's like she had another disappointing for her Wimbledon this year.
Yep.
And it'll be interesting to see kind of what she has in the tank for the U.S. Open and on hard courts. She loves playing on hard courts. She has, again, that hard court Grand Slam now, so you know she's feeling good about the surface. But I'll be really interesting to hear what she said to you.
Ooh,
see where her mind is at. Yes.
Thank you for that segue. Well, it's been an intriguing year for her, and that's where we start off this interview. But this chat also includes talk of her home away from home in New York, where she has a loft. Also, her golf game. You're going to check out how Caroline...
She golfs now?
Well, you're going to see.
Okay.
And then how she stays in such freaking ridiculous shape and more. She's playing the City Open this week as the top seed. Here's my chat with Caroline Wozniacki. I think I want to ask you first about... I was going to try to describe your year, but how would you describe your year so far in 2018?
I'd say it's been great. I won my first Grand Slam. I think that kind of sets the tone, and I'm really happy with that. And I'm positive and hoping for a good hard court season, a good end to the year.
I mean, you've been around now for a while, but I know it felt so good to win that first Grand Slam after you came down from that high. What was the challenge to keep going, Caroline, and to continue to be at the top?
You know, I think for me, being on tour for so long and doing so much already, I think for me it was just... you know, having to refocus and being like, okay, well, now I have everything and the resume that I would want. And so what's really the next thing? And I think for me, it's all about the journey and the ups and the downs and the toughness to getting there and, you know, competing with the top players. And that's what I really enjoy. And so you just have to put your head down and keep working.
Did winning, I was just looking through the pictures of you match point winning in Australia. Did it feel the way you thought it? And I mean, now that you can reflect
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it was a combination of a lot of emotions, and I think in the moment it was really amazing. And then, you know, after that, you kind of, you know, everything is the same. You know, your life is the same, your friends is the same, everything is kind of the same. But you know, it's great, it's awesome. I'm happy to have that on my resume, and you know, never have to worry about that.
Okay, we're back on the hard courts. Obviously, you've been to the final of the U.S. Open a couple times, semifinals in 2016. Is this your favorite part of the season? Why do you think your game works so well on the hard courts?
Yeah, I think my game suits the hard court well. I move well on it, and I think I can defend and play aggressive. I can kind of go in and out of both. And I love New York. I love the people in New York, and the U.S. Open is very special to me. I've done great results there. I think I have multiple semifinals and you know, a couple of finals, and I think it's just playing on a huge stage like that, I think, gets me really fired up.
Okay, just overall, as your game has evolved, because, you know, 10 years ago you were, or 9 years ago you were in the U.S. Open final, but you've stayed on top, but your game's changed here and there. How would you describe your game?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. Anyways, I think, you know, you keep improving, you keep going with the times, you keep trying to figure out what you can do to be a better tennis player and be a more all-around player, and I think I've added better serving, returning. I think physically, I think you keep just tuning your body to make sure that it can stay fit and healthy. And I think, you know, you add some aggressiveness to your game, but also I think figuring out when to hit the right shots. I think that's really it. You get that with the experience.
You were just in speaking with the media, and you were talking about your fitness, that you've had an old trainer come back and work with you after Wimbledon. I mean, to me, Caroline, you continue to set the bar so high for everyone else, but that's a lot of hard work for you off the court, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's something that I really pride myself on, and something that I know has helped me reach what I've reached in my career is really the way I work, and I know that my work ethic is really great, and I think, you know, just keep constantly trying to be physically fit and trying to be the strongest and the fastest. And I know I can't always be the strongest because some players are taller or bigger than me or whatever it is. But, you know, I think to try and build an all-around, for me, physique is something that I really have tried to fine-tune.
I mean, I'm exhausted thinking about all the work that you do off the court, but has that evolved too, the sense of training off the court and what you do to stay in shape?
100%. I used to do, like, really regimented military, basically, trainings where I would literally go to bed and everything would hurt. But I think as you get older, you know, I exhaust myself, but you have to be more smart about it because the body doesn't keep up the same way anymore.
You were on the golf course recently, right? With your fiancé, David Lee. How's your golf game?
You know, it wasn't great. It wasn't even good. But it wasn't as bad as I thought it would going to be at that point.
I mean, are you
point.
A golfer?
No, he plays a lot. And I'll go out with him once in a while. And I really enjoy going out and playing 9 holes with him. 18 is too long for me. But 9, I can kind of keep myself focused. And I hit a great driver, actually. And my 7-iron is fine. And then the putting, that's kind of where it stops.
Part.
Yeah,
okay.
So
baby steps.
Exactly.
You mentioned New York obviously being so special for you. I think in times you've called it your home slam almost. You've got a place there. What about the tournament just sort of brings out your best tennis?
First of all, I can stay at home, which is great. Just being with, you know, my friends and family, it kind of brings that, you know, home atmosphere. And then the people are so friendly, and I love the loudness at the US Open. People cheer, people get into it, people get excited. And you have 23,000 people on center court watching, and I think there's nothing that beats that. And going out there in the night session, it just makes it extra special.
Do you have a favorite US Open memory? I mean, you've created a few for yourself.
I have a lot. I think some of my night sessions has been some of my favorites. I've grinded out some crazy 7-5 in the third matches, and at night session, I think those are some of my favorite ones.
Yeah, the night session's always so electric. Is there anything else like it in tennis?
I really don't think so. I really think that's something that is so special. I think every Grand Slam has their own kind of feel, and I think Australia has some of it as well, but it's different still. Everyone is so polite in Australia, and everyone is it's the happy slam, as they say. But I think the US Open is just a little louder.
Okay, we mentioned your 2009 run to the final. You reached number one soon thereafter. What do you think that girl has learned in her 10 years? Or, you know, I mean, obviously you've been on tour for longer than that, but I just look at that run for you, and obviously it was maybe career-changing at that point, but you've evolved so much. We talked about your tennis, but you as a person, too.
Yeah, I think you learned so much. I think, you know, after getting to number one in such a young age, it was my dream.
Yeah.
And it was something I'd worked for, so hard for. But, you know, I think you realize that, and I think second time around when I won my Grand Slam and became number one again, I think you just realize it's about the journey. It's about the enjoyment of the tough times and the good times and, you know, getting through injuries and fighting back. And I think all of that together is what makes something so special and reaching it special. It's not the tournament itself. It's the whole journey, preparing yourself for that moment. And I think that's what I've learned, and I think that's the experience that comes into it.
Can I ask you how wedding plans are coming?
Great.
Are they? Is there a date or you're...
I don't know.
We're staying general.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. For you, just in general, though, we mentioned your apartment in New York. There is that difference of being able to stay at home and have your own bed and those creature comforts, because you guys are on the road all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And to just have homemade food sometimes and just kind of being able to chill, and you watch your own TV, and it's really makes a difference.
So, Caroline, lastly, U.S. Open series, heading into the U.S. Open itself, how do you set expectations for yourself to hopefully not put too much pressure on you and your game, but also I know that you want to win every match that you play?
Yeah, honestly, I think at this point in my career, I'm just going out there and enjoying every moment of it, and I don't really put too much pressure. I think, you know, I want to win, and I'm a competitor, but I think also, you know, as long as I go out there and give it my all, then that's all I can do. You know, if the opponent beats me, they really have to play great tennis to beat me.
Well, thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
All right, a big thanks to Caro for joining us on Courtside. Also to Ava Wallace of the Washington Post. I think you nailed it on your first appearance on Courtside.
Thank you so much. Does this mean I get an invite back?
Yeah,
can I be on the app?
Sure. You are going to be covering the U.S. Open, right?
Yes.
The full thing.
All 2 weeks. It's going to be great.
You ready?
I'm going to stock up on sleep as much as possible, and then we'll see.
Okay.
I don't think sleep
good
is
luck.
Happening.
Yeah, good luck on that.
Yeah.
And how do people find your writing?
They can follow me on Twitter at Ava, A-V-A-R Wallace, or head to thewashingtonpost.com.
Awesome. And the Washington Post obviously does incredible work, not only here in D.C., but around the country. Thank you, Ava. You guys, later this week, Steve Flink is going to be back with another legend in our next episode of Courtside. Guess who it is? It's Mats Wilander. He's a 7-time major champion, and it's been 30 years since his U.S. Open triumph in 1988. That's coming this Thursday, and you can find all of our episodes, my episodes, Steve's episodes, and the episodes that we share on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and more. Go to usopen.org for your U.S. Open tickets, and for all things U.S. Open series, tickets, TV times, draws, orders of play, previews, wrap-ups, everything, it's on usopenseries.com. I'm Nick McCarville. This has been episode 16 of Courtside, the official podcast of the U.S. Open. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you again very soon.